I will now call the second case on today's oral argument calendar. That is case number A22-0964, Nicholas T. White versus Adriana L. Loesch and Dakota County. We have received briefs from the appellant, Mr. White, and from respondent Dakota County. And so I believe those are the two parties prepared to give oral argument. Is that correct? Very good. Counsel for appellant, you may approach and begin. Please identify yourself and your client at the beginning of your argument.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name is Brian Lewis. I represent appellant Nicholas White. We are here today to ask you to reverse the decision of the child support magistrate in this case. Our oral argument today will center around what we believe and advances the lack of jurisdiction the child support magistrate had to make a determination regarding certain facts in the case, which went to whether the child was, whether the respondent had the right to put the child into an educational situation and thereby receive additional monies. We will then talk about the conduct of the hearing and what we perceive as errors, and then if time permits, we will talk about the lack of consideration or the consideration of the medical information in this case. However, I am prepared to answer questions as the court sees fit. The jurisdiction of the child support magistrate is exceptionally limited in a case such as this. The child support magistrate may not make decisions regarding things that go to the custodial rights of the parents. And in this case, as both parties recognize, the child support magistrate did make such a decision by acknowledging that the parent, that the respondent had the right and had the permissive ability to place the child into preschool.
I don't think, are you looking at paragraph 45 on at addendum 5?
I believe so, Your Honor, yes.
And I don't think it says anything about right or permission. It seems to me like the CSM was talking about the reasonableness of those expenses. I agree that the CSM used language talking about the benefits of preschool, but it seems to me that that really, the purpose of the paragraph was to support the reasonableness of those expenses. Disagree with that?
Yes, Your Honor, in part. I disagree with it on the ground that the reasonableness of the expense had to consider whether, in order to determine that the expense was reasonable, the child support magistrate had to make a decision that the respondent had the ability to do those things. And that's what the CSM did, citing Horsman. However,
now I recall during the hearing there was an issue about the CSM statutory authority. It occurred, I think, during your cross-examination of a witness, perhaps a county witness, And you made a statement that we're not challenging anything to do with custody, and the CSM made an explicit statement, I think to Ms. Loesch maybe, that nothing I'm going to determine here is going to have any effect on custody or custodial decisions and so on. I mean, am I correct in recalling the record, and doesn't that indicate that the district court did not intend to make any decision in this matter that affects custody or custodial rights?
I believe Your Honor's memory is pretty close to accurate. While the child support magistrate may not have intended to do so, the net effect of the decision is that the CSM did make that decision. If the parent didn't have the ability to place the child into a preschool environment by themselves without the consent of the other parent, which is essentially joint custody, which is what the parents enjoy in this case, then the reasonableness of the expense could not be determined. It basically, in order to get to whether the expense was legitimately incurred, you have to make the decision that the parent had the right to do so, to place the child where they were incurring the expense, in this case, unilaterally.
Is it your contention that preschool is not routine daily care of the child?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Your contention that sending a child to preschool is not a decision that's a routine daily care of a child of that age?
Absolutely. Well, I want to be absolutely clear, Your Honor, that sending a child to daycare may, in some circumstances, be the day-to-day thing, but that's not what we have here. We have here a finding that preschool is the place.
That's my question.
Is
it your contention that educating a pre-K child is not part of the daily care of the child?
Exactly, Your Honor. The placement of a child in an educational situation is something that both parents, at least in a joint custody situation, have the duty to confer about and come to a decision.
Do you have some authority that supports a proposition that we're dealing with something other than just routine daily care of a child?
Your Honor, I believe in the statutory in the statutory factors around the best interests of the children, that placement in education is something that is a product of joint custody. And for the life of me, I'm not remembering the statute. I want to say it's 518.17.
I mean, typically when these issues arise that we see, it's a question of mom wants to send child to school A and dad wants to send the child to school B, and then there's some dispute over that. And this is a situation, it seems to me, where mom wants to send the child to school and dad is saying no.
And for purposes here, that's a correct understanding. And because it involves a school decision, as Your Honor's noting, that comes into the joint custody decision, and that's something that must be resolved by the district court, not the child support magistrate. And I believe that Judge Johnson, with his excellent remembrance of the facts or the transcript, would recall that we did make a statement that we were concerned about child care, and or that we weren't concerned about child care, but making the decision about a school is a whole different thing from child care.
I mean, am I correct that the hearing occurred in April of 22? I believe the child was 5 years old then. I mean, so, and I believe the child had been attending preschool for, I don't know, maybe that academic year, so to speak, or since the previous fall. And so, I mean, the child was already enrolled in that program 2 half-days a week. And there was, I mean, you didn't make an argument to the district court that the mother should remove the child from preschool, right? It was only about who pays for it.
Your Honor, as the county correctly notes, we didn't make an argument to the district court or to the CSM about child care. But, and as the child support magistrate correctly recognized, nothing that she did or wanted to do actually was going to touch any of the other things such as education. And quite simply, the child support magistrate lacked the legal authority, the jurisdiction, to make that decision as to whether the educational placement of the child was appropriate. That's not within the ambit of the CSM.
How is your client prejudiced by any decision concerning either daycare or preschool? Because in the end, the CSM ordered a downward deviation with respect to child care costs and ordered the amount to be zero. So So what does it matter?
Your Honor, it matters because as the decision of the CSM, if left standing, does constitute law of the case. And even though we would argue later, obviously, that the CSM made the finding, if this court allows that opinion to stand, the harm comes that it not only makes his ability to challenge the finding much harder, but we would argue makes it almost impossible because that issue has already been decided.
Would that concern evaporate if our opinion made clear that this is not a determination about either parties, either parent's right to determine preschool or no preschool? It is simply limited to the question of payment of child care support, and therefore, you know, so understood, then it seems like it would have no consequences for the case going forward. Would you agree?
If this court's decision was limited in that way, we would still be left with the problem at the district court of saying that, yes, the child support magistrate determined this was a legitimate and necessary expense. And therefore, even if the district judge, you know, later on was to say, appellate court says this is not, this is not a decision on that, the CSM therefore found that it was a necessary expense, we're back at the same problem of how do you get to a necessary expense that's not explicitly authorized by statute.
This is a problem that's not apt to repeat itself given the child's age. I take it the child's in first grade now, kindergarten or first grade, which is public school, right?
Your Honor, I would assume so. I don't want to make that statement on behalf of my client without absolutely knowing for sure, but given the time of the year, I would assume that there's something like that, and I would assume also that this could recur, assuming decisions later on come about whether there's supplemental educational things that are determined later on.
Well, wouldn't that be subject to a new hearing? I mean, I would take it those would be new expenses and the circumstances of the parties would have to be considered.
And whether that came at the form of a new hearing or not, I would assume it's a new hearing. But of course, if this court affirms the finding of the CSM, it would be then dealt with through the expedited process, and the CSM would then likely be able to say, the Court of Appeals affirmed me the last time we did this, therefore there's no proper objection, and we end up right back here arguing the same legal substance, if not the same factual substance. And that's where I believe the problem comes in. I also...
A question about the affidavit?
Yes, Your Honor.
The affidavit of petitioner's mother, that's how this affidavit is captioned.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the district court made a credibility determination that an affidavit from a petitioner's mother is an insufficient evidentiary basis to conclude that a person is disabled within the meaning of the law. How was that an abuse of discretion?
Your Honor, inside the affidavit, if my memory serves me correctly, the petitioner's mother does identify herself as a registered nurse licensed in
the... She says she's a nurse, but she doesn't say that she's treated him or diagnosed him herself or has assessed that he's got any reasonable limitations based on her personal experience and observing him in a work environment. I mean, the district court discredited it, essentially, that it's character evidence, which is not admissible.
And that is essentially what the CSM did, but...
And why was that an abuse of discretion?
Because at the end of the day, Your Honor, petitioner's mother does identify herself as a nurse, which you're saying, which, if I understand your question, is not the sole determination, but as a licensed medical professional, even though...
I'm a licensed lawyer and you're a licensed lawyer, but just because I say to somebody, oh, I think that you have this cause of action, doesn't necessarily mean that I'm dispensing legal advice or, right?
I mean, absolutely, Your
the
Honor.
The fact that you're licensed to do something doesn't mean that you are qualified to render an opinion on all things.
That's true, Your Honor. And, you know, let's be clear, as licensed attorneys, we argue about the law all the time. That's what we're doing here. But I also see, and I think the district courts across the state have seen medical professionals in a slightly different class than lawyers, in that she's been around the appellant for many years. While she didn't treat him as a parent, and I'm sure I'm speaking to the choir here a little bit, parents see things in their children. They see what the net effect of medicines, therapeutic approaches, et cetera. And I think that basis gives her the credibility, the right to make that evaluation, make that assessment in a affidavit form. And that's what she did. And I think that the abuse of discretion was in treating it solely as a parental affidavit rather than as a medical affidavit. And I see my time is up for this leg. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. You will have an opportunity for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, to please identify yourself and your client, and then you may begin.
Hopefully you can see me. You raised it for me.
There are buttons on the front edge. You found it.
With heels today. May it please the court. My name is Lisa Kuntz. I am an assistant Dakota County attorney representing respondent Dakota County. Dakota County is providing child support services in this case and intervened in this matter by serving and filing a notice of intervention. The child support magistrate's May 9th, 2022 order should be affirmed. The standard of review that this court applies is whether the child support magistrate's findings were clearly erroneous and the decision is against logic and facts on the record. The child support magistrate's finding that appellant is voluntarily unemployed and has the ability to earn potential income based on his employment potential and recent work history are not clearly erroneous and are supported by the record. The child support magistrate's findings and order regarding child care are within her statutory authority and are not clearly erroneous. And the child support magistrate did not abuse her authority by allowing appellant's testimony. I want to first start with the appellant's argument regarding child care. The child support magistrate's findings and order regarding child care are within her statutory authority and are not clearly erroneous. The magistrate found that respondent Lesh incurred work or education-related child care costs. Pursuant to the child support guidelines, the appellant would owe his proportionate costs, share of those costs. However, as the court has noted, the magistrate deviated downward and did not order appellant to pay any amount towards the child care.
Is the child no longer in this program? Is the child enrolled in public school now?
Your Honor, I do not. I am not aware of that. However, I will note that in the findings, the magistrate does indicate, and the record includes, that there were $95 a month in preschool expenses and $745 a month in child care costs. So the amount of the preschool costs was negligible compared with the regular amount of child care costs. In addition, he was not ordered to contribute to those. So even if this court would determine that preschool costs should not be included, there were other costs that he would have been ordered to pay towards if the court did not deviate downward. In addition, paragraph 45 does indicate that the magistrate's findings were regarding what was reasonable for work or education-related child care costs, and therefore were not outside her jurisdiction.
Just to be clear, that the word employment related in that context refers to the parent's employment, is that right?
That is
correct.
Excuse
me, education, employment or education related. So the education relates to the parent's education, if the parent needs childcare in order for the parent to go to school?
Correct. The statute allows for reimbursement of childcare costs for a parent who is either working or attending school, which would be the parent's education. That is correct, Your Honor.
That's what I assumed.
I want to touch on the child support's magistrate's finding that the appellant was voluntarily under. This finding was also not clearly erroneous. It is rebuttably presumed that a parent can be gainfully employed on a full-time basis, and it is appellant's burden to rebut this presumption by showing his unemployment was due to a disability. The child support magistrate's findings that appellant does not suffer from a physical or mental disability that would prevent him from working are not clearly erroneous and are based on facts in the record. Appellant does not argue he is unable to work. He was previously employed. His prior employment ended in July of 2021 after he had a medical incident on the job. He testified he tried to return to that job a dozen times. He also testified about starting his own business and the anticipated income he could earn. In addition, he testified he could work for Instacart to earn extra income. While appellant argues that the magistrate disregarded the evidence of his disabilities provided in an affidavit by his mother, in fact, in finding 17, the child support magistrate acknowledged the education and expertise of the appellant, but found that the appellant failed to provide the information necessary, including what is causing the incapacity, the level of incapacitation, the probable duration, the treatment, and the specific limitations on appellant's ability to work. The affidavit makes no assertion that appellant is unable to work. And finding that an affidavit from a parent does not hold the weight of an independent medical opinion is not clearly erroneous.
It's just a credibility determination, right?
Yes, Your Honor. Next, the child support magistrate's calculation of appellant's income was not clearly erroneous. 518A.32 subdivision 2 states that potential income must be calculated using one of three methods as appropriate. Those three methods are a parent's probable earnings level based on employment potential, recent work history, and occupational qualifications in light of prevailing job opportunities and earnings levels in the community. Second, the amount of unemployment or workers' compensation received by a parent. And third, the amount a parent would earn working 30 hours per week at 100% of minimum wage. The child support magistrate's findings regarding appellant's potential income are based in fact, not clearly erroneous, and are consistent with the first method provided in the statute. The magistrate used appellant's average hourly wage from his 2016 to 2021 earnings. The magistrate found that his highest earnings were in 2021, which was the last employer he had, earning $19.45 an hour full-time. However, she also found that he consistently earned more than minimum wage since 2016. The magistrate also made findings concerning appellant's testimony about his own earning ability. He planned to start an audio installation business and testified if that business did well, he could earn between $7,000 and $10,000 a month. Evidence in the record also includes the Minnesota Salary Survey median wage for that type of employment, which is $19.51 an hour. Finally, she found that appellant can work at least 30 hours per week while attending school. The appellant had testified he would be starting school part-time, but did not provide information about his hours. As a result, the child support magistrate found that the appellant could earn a potential monthly income based on $14.50 an hour, 30 hours a week. Appellant argues that his income should be calculated based on a minimum wage at 30 hours because the magistrate selected the measure of income that exceeds what is provided in the statute. However, the statute states potential income must be determined using one of the three methods as appropriate. Because the record contains information about appellant's probable earnings level, including his recent work history, his earnings, and occupational qualifications, it was not clearly erroneous for the magistrate to use the first statutory method. Appellant also argues that the magistrate selected the greatest period of earning for appellant, which was inconsistent with his historical earnings. In fact, the magistrate averaged appellant's earnings and did not use his most recent employment, the greatest earnings he had, which is $19.45 per hour. The child support magistrate also did not abuse her authority by allowing appellant's testimony. Child support matters in the expedited process are governed by a particular set of the Minnesota General Rules of Practice. Those rules specifically provide that evidence may be presented through documents and testimony of the parties or their witnesses. Testimony may be given in a narrative fashion by witnesses or by question and answer. Any party may be a witness and may present witnesses. Rule 364.12 specifically allows a party to call another party. In this case, the assistant county attorney questioned appellant as a witness as allowed by the rules. The appellant argues that the assistant county attorney rested her case. The record indicates that the magistrate asked the county at the beginning of the hearing if there was anything they would like to address before hearing from respondent regarding her motion. The assistant county attorney stated some agreements that the parties had reached prior to the hearing and took testimony from the child support officer. When asked by the magistrate whether there was anything else from the county right now, she responded, "Not at this moment." The rules also allow the child support magistrate to ask questions of witnesses when needed to ensure sufficient evidence to make the required findings. The magistrate's question, clarifying appellant's educational endeavors and other aspects of his financial situation, are not an abuse of her authority and were necessary in this case to make the required findings. Therefore, the child support magistrate did not clearly err when she allowed the county to inquire of appellant and inquired of him herself, and appellant's request for reverse and remand should be denied. Dakota County respectfully requests that the May 9th, 2022 child support order be affirmed and appellant's request to reverse and remand be denied. I see I have some time left. Have any questions? I'm happy to answer them. Thank you.
It appears there are no questions. Thank you very much, Ms. Kuntz. Mr. Lewis, you have an opportunity for 5 minutes of rebuttal argument.
Thank you, Your Honors. The first thing we in rebuttal would be that the standard of review here is de novo, and the standard of review is not.
For which issue?
For all issues. Your Honor, this is
When the district court makes, or when the child support magistrate makes an evidentiary determination or a credibility determination, we review that for abuse of discretion, don't we?
When there's a credibility determination being made, yes, that would be abuse of discretion. However, here, it goes as to whether the child support magistrate legally first off, that there was a legal determination as to what the parent is. But on that one, there is an argument for abuse of discretion. But the county has advanced their argument of clearly erroneous. However, in this situation, the appeal was brought directly to the Court of Appeals, and when the child support magistrate's decision is essentially given the weight of the district court, for the legal issues, those are de novo, and if the court determines that the credibility determination is an evidentiary determination, then that would be abuse of discretion. However, in regards to the conduct of the hearing, what was not mentioned is that no one called appellant as a witness. And that's the benchmark of the rules, is that both sides are able to call witnesses and give evidence as they see fit. And in the transcript, the county is correct that the court asked if there was any other questions. The county declined at that time. Appellant's counsel went into presentation, did not call the appellant as a witness, and rested after the presentation. It was the court, sua sponte, who called the appellant as a witness. And that, we argue legally, is outside the permissive nature of the rules.
Isn't it isn't it a better characterization that the district court allowed the county to call your client as a witness? I mean, in other words, I mean, the questioning began with questions from the assistant county attorney, not the CSM herself. CSM did ask some questions after all parties had had an opportunity to ask questions, but it seems to me that we have to characterize this as the district court, CSM, allowing the county to call your client as a witness at that point during the hearing.
Your Honor, that I believe that's belied by the, page 21 of the transcript, starting around line 18. The appellant's counsel had concluded his presentation, and then specifically there says, "Ms. Isaac, any questions that you have for Mr. White?" Mr. White was never called as a witness.
So the CSM, you know, making a transition in the hearing, turned to the county, asked the county whether it wished to call Mr. White as a witness, and the county said yes and did so.
But that's not the record, Your Honor. The record is that the CSM treated Mr. White as though he had already been called when, in fact, he had not. And it's up the standard principle.
Well, that's different from, I mean, my, what I was questioning is your statement, I think it's in your brief as well as your oral argument, that the court or the CSM called Mr. White as a witness.
Yes, Your Honor. Essentially, that's the way that happened. The CSM treated the...
Given that way of describing it, I think that would fit a situation where the presiding judicial officer says, "I'm now going to ask questions of this party to the case," and then does conduct an examination initially. But that didn't happen here. The county, the CSM asked the assistant county attorney, "Do you wish to ask questions?" The assistant county attorney said yes and did so. It seems to me that the county called your client as a witness. And I understand you still may have an argument that that was error, but it's a different type of error, it seems to me, than the one that you're presenting.
And, Your Honor, that there are multiple plausible interpretations of what happened. You've advanced one, I've advanced one, and the court would have to make the decision as to how that went. However, what the expedited child support rules do is not to allow the hearing to be determined essentially as it goes. It allows parties to essentially have the same process as they would in the district court. And it's an acknowledgement of the fact that most times these hearings are conducted pro se or with the county being the only attorney.
I'm not sure I agree with that statement that it's the same. It seems to me that there's explicit statements highlighting the differences between the expedited process. I'm looking at 351.02, but I don't think we need to get into that. So maybe if you want to make rebuttal argument on any other issues, feel free.
Your Honor, what the only other issue that I would take attack with is the paragraph 19 listing the factors. The child support magistrate in there says that the most common and usual way of doing these things is through this. The child support magistrate doesn't say that this is what is legally required. The child support magistrate says this is usual and customary, and because you don't have the usual and customary. But that's not what the statute requires. The statute requires the evidence to be brought forward. Comparing it against what's usual and customary is not what the law requires. Law says you have to bring forward the evidence. It doesn't say you have to meet all the factors that the CSM advanced in paragraph 19.
Mr. Lewis, I just realized that your time has expired, and so maybe I'll ask you to stop.
Yeah, Your Honor, for the reasons advanced here, we ask that the court reverse and remand the order of the child support measure. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Thank you to both attorneys for your argument. The case is submitted. The court will issue its opinion within 90 days.